Welcome to the In His Voice podcast, hosted by me, Rob L. Lowe, where we talk about the trials and tribulations that deeply impact the lives of boys and men without ever bashing women. We talk about things from the bedroom to the boardroom, from the playground to the stadium, and everything in between. On today's show, we have a special guest, my nephew, Carter Fox.
Thank you, Aunt. My name, like you said, is Carter Fox. I want to say thank you, Unc, for having me on the show, and I guess we can just dive right in.
All right, man. Well, listen, I know a little about your story, and so we got to go back. We got to go back to, tell the listeners your family dynamics, you know, parents, sisters, brothers, everything, sort of paint the picture of your youth.
All right. So, yeah, I got two deaf parents. My mom, I'm a biracial family, so my dad's black, my mom's white. I got three siblings. I got two brothers and one sister. I am the oldest of them, but, you know, there's one that'll tell you only by 2 months. signing was my first language, so I guess we'll start with that and how I was the mouthpiece for, you know, both my parents. And then when I moved with my dad full time, especially when I got older, at around 10 years old, I really started speaking for him and getting involved in, you know, things that kids normally don't get involved in, like speaking with your parents as far as doctor's visits, medical appointments, business dealings. So my dad, like, as you know, he's really good with his handiwork, contracting type stuff, you know, tiling and stuff like that. And I was his negotiator during a lot of those interactions. Even interpreting in churches, funerals.
All right, so let's go back. What's your recollection of your earliest time remembering where you knew how to sign language fluently? Like, what's your earliest memory? Like, how old do you think you were?
I remember maybe being maybe six, yeah. And dad throwing on the VHS tape and actually seeing me as a baby, like 2-3 signing like fluently and stuff like that. That's the earliest I recognized my own self signing. So I would say about 5. But it never really, you know, you never really think about that, you know. You take for granted kind of speaking and, you know, how you learned it and stuff like that, especially if it's your first language. Yeah. I remember the struggles of trying to master speaking, you know, actually verbalizing English words, because American Sign, you know, speak with your hands, is not a direct translation to just direct English. So I definitely had a learning curve when I going through that.
When did you get comfortable being able to speak orally versus using sign language?
I want to say it was after going to speech therapy. So I had to go to speech therapy and, you know, tutoring for reading and stuff like that, because I was really behind the curve.
Yeah.
And so the school got together and helped my mom out. And I had to go after school and go. At first, I wasn't, you know, I was upset. I was like, man, I got to go stay after school. But I ended up liking it because I had, like, this really cute girl. I had, probably a little schoolboy crush on. And that's how I ended up, you know, learning how to speak verbally. But even now, I was still not very social. You could probably speak more to that, because for a while I would just be the mellow kid sitting down in school. I remember my middle school teacher, everyone else was, we had, you know, break in class, everyone else was just chatting it up, and I was just sitting there on the edge of my desk just in my own world, and he was like, "Are you good? Are you all right?" And so I'm like, now I think about it, it's like, a lot of people probably thought something was going on at home, but we just, you know, used to speak with our hands and not very, and it was a learning curve, I guess, as to, like, you know, developing my interpersonal skills.
Yeah.
And right now I would say I'm pretty, you know, sociable, you know. Yeah. I don't mind going out and striking up a conversation with anybody.
My first encounter, of course, I knew you when you were a baby, you and your sister, like really when you were babies. That's when I, you're 20, almost 25 now.
Yeah, almost.
Right. October. So I've been with Robin 27 years. But I remember visiting you all in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and then your dad moved to Lenexa, Kansas, where we live. And when he first moved there, you and your sister were babies, and y'all came to live with us in our townhome. And it was really shocking because you and Kaylee would interact with Jania and Trinity, right, your cousins. But whenever I would come in the room, like, y'all would take off running. Like, if Robin came in the room, y'all would take off running, but definitely me. And I used to say, Robin, they won't speak, but I will see you sign with your dad all the time. Even at the age of maybe four at the time, four or five, like, you were teaching Janine and Trinity how to sign. Like, you were. And they,
I don't remember that.
Yeah, I'm telling you, like, you were. Like, they would ask Alan a question, your dad, and then you would turn around and sign to them and show them how to say it. And I'm sitting here thinking, like, I don't know how to do this. Like, I know how to write things or finger spell. Yeah. Even then I get that messed up. Or I'll know a gesture. And if I can do it halfway, he knows what I'm talking about. But half the time, I'm probably not doing it right. But I do try. Here's something interesting. So coming to Lenexa, seeing you and your sister, and you all did not talk. Like, you did not talk. Like, you would talk with Janine and Trinity, but you wouldn't talk with other adults. And it almost seemed like you were scared. And I was like, man, like they're fine here. Like, but it, I mean, literally, you would literally go in the basement, in the bedroom, in the bottom of the townhome, and get in the corner and not say anything. What's your first recollection of having a friend?
Ooh, I want to say my first childhood friend would have to be when I was living with my mom in Glenpool, Oklahoma, outside of Tulsa. His name was Ramsey.
Okay.
And I like to say that was my country boy era, because while running around barefoot, getting into creeks and stuff like that. But I don't know, if he was my neighbor, and we also just kind of like bonded over, you know, our desire to be outside. And it seemed like I don't even remember even him asking anything about my mom being deaf or anything. Because as I got older, a lot of people were like, how do they raise you? How do they, you know, drive? How do they, it's like, you know, they just drive.
Yeah.
You know, and I understand where they're coming from because it's a different perspective. But, you know, to me, it was normal. And I think it was easy for me to bond with Ramsey because I think he also didn't, maybe because he was so young, we were five, six, and it didn't bother him. So,
well, what was it like? So let's talk about growing up with both of your parents in the same household. So what was that like for you and your sister when you all lived together in Tulsa?
In Tulsa, I don't remember specifically growing up with both my parents, but growing up with my mom, so my mom and my dad are like completely opposite people. My mom likes to, you know, party and whatnot, and my dad's more on the mellow side of stuff like that. But growing up with either one of them, it was just, like I said, to me, that was my normal. Uh-huh. So I didn't realize until I got older and really, you know, started spending the night at, you know, other friends' house and stuff like that, and realizing kind of like their dynamic versus mine, and how unique my situation is, and why other people are so interested in, you know, understanding the life of a CODA, a child of a deaf adult.
CODA, mm-hmm. Child of a deaf adult. Okay, so that's mm-hmm. that's a good, interesting fact to know. What would you say, describe the difference in living with your mom versus when you came to Kansas and living with your dad? And then what was your role and even in their relationship? Like, you told me stories about having to be their mediator at a young age. So
yeah, I think moving with my dad at the time, it was a very, you know, turbulent experience because I was a mama's boy, like, okay, really bad. So, and I, whenever I had finally, you know, moved with my dad, she told me there was only gonna be 2 weeks and I was gonna be coming back. And I get there and I realize, he's like, no, I got full custody for you. At first I was upset, But I needed that. I needed him, you know, to add that structure in my life, to add that discipline. Because it was missing for a while. Because I think before I moved to Philly, I didn't see my dad for probably a year or two. Yeah. And, you know, it was getting to the point where I was acting up. You know, I was getting, you know, removed from school. Anger issues. I had a lot of anger issues and stuff like that. And I think finally, you know, my mom was like, here, take him. He's too much, you know. And that hurt a little bit, but like I said, I'm also grateful that she decided to do that, because I think if I was not living with my dad, I'd be a completely different man than I am today. And I have nothing but him to thank for that. So yeah, I mean, how my mom is she kind of more treats me as a friend first rather than a mom. Mm-hmm. And then my dad, he was, because when I got there, I didn't make good grades. I was like, because I didn't care. You know, I was my mom, we lived in the inner city. You know, I was just sitting here trying to flirt with girls. And I remember my teacher in fifth grade telling me to be quiet and quit talking to these girls. I was like playing with some scissors one occasion, just trying to, you know, flex for whatever reason to these two Hispanic girls. I remember calling them shorties and stuff like that. I was 8 years old.
And this is in Kansas City at the time, right?
No, this is in Oklahoma. Okay. I finally moved my dad. And that's when, like I said, that turbulent, it was like kind of like a buffer period of, you know, some ass whoopings and some discipline needing to be happened before I got caught up to speed on what he expected out of me.
Yeah.
And like I said, I appreciate him for that, because when I first got there, I was like, was very behind on my math and my everything. I want to say all the core subjects I was behind on, didn't really care about school. And then, you know, his expectation of me being better than what he was doing, and he believed in me, and then me really getting to meet the family, like you, Uncle Arthur, Uncle Cortez, and really seeing what, like, you know, black excellence looks like in a man and what real men look like, and being surrounded by you and my dad set me on the path to greatness, you know. And I had my hiccups along the way, and we'll definitely get into that, but without him being at the center of that, I definitely would be.
What was your role when they split? What was your role?
So yeah, that's the crappy part. My dad and my mom, they weren't on the best of terms. Mm-hmm. And they kind of expected me, you know, I was already the mouth for my dad as far as speaking, you know, with hearing people. But he also expected me to be the mediator between him and my mom and set up, you know, pickups and drop-offs and, oh, you need to help support with this. Or it could be whatever reason. Me and, you know, just mostly me, but my sister Kaylee was also involved a little bit in that, and trying to visit each parent. And it was just really stressful. And it's just nothing. You don't need to involve your kids in something like that. And that was a lesson I learned now, mm-hmm. me being a father, you know. And me and my ex, you know, we went through our, you know, tribulation of, you know, getting divorced and trying to figure out this whole co-parent thing. But one thing we both agreed on was we are not going to involve our daughter Gracie in adult business. Whatever happens between the parents stays between the parents. And, you know, I'm not trying to, you know, and no one's perfect. I'm not trying to, you know, bash my mom or my dad for whatever, you know, they have their own perspectives on how they are going to handle the situations. But that's one thing I'm proud to say is I don't talk bad about my ex, my child's mom in front of her. I don't let other people do it. Period.
What was the hardest part? Being the child of Coda, or being a Coda.
The hardest part I think was for dad, I feel like he was, I don't know if it was him being deaf or had anything to do with his deafness, but I feel like he was just so, it was kind of slow to catch him up on information, you know, mm-hmm. relevant, important information that would actually benefit him or something like that. It could also be because I was his son, like, you know, what does my son know and XYZ, but I don't think he realized that because I was his mouth and had to be involved in mm-hmm. these important decisions that, you know, there was a sense of maturity about me. And I honestly attribute that into why I'm very analytical. I like to research things before I make a decision on it. And I don't think he really understood that about me and didn't really trust my word. So it's kind of very difficult as far as that matter. I would say that was one of the more difficult things, is trying to inform him on, try and be his advisor pretty much.
You talked about, you started the segment talking about having to interpret for him business dealings. Like, give me an example. Like, tell me some of the more challenging things, or what type of things did you have to be his mouth for?
It was when he was doing his contracting work. Like, I remember a time, you know, at the time I didn't appreciate it. Now I just wanted to go home, play games, hang out with friends, whatever. But, you know, he was like, he made me go with him to put in tiling at, you know, a client's house. And we got there, and I automatically knew the offer was low. I want to say it was like the size of your living room here, you know, 25 feet by maybe 13. And he wanted to pay us like $150.
What?
And, you know, have his mom cook us, you know, a really nice dinner. My dad was saying, automatically saying yes. I told him, had our conversation signed to him. I was like, Dad, that is not a good deal. I was like, one, like, you drove your truck out here.
Wow.
And it was a decent drive. I want to say it was a good 45 minutes to an hour. And I'm like, is that really worth your labor, just getting fed food and $150? I was like, you're not going to be able to do anything with that. He's like, well, but they're good clients and, you know, they're really nice people. And he was a doctor. And I felt really disrespected that he was going to lowball my dad like that. And so there was times that I took it into my own hands and said, we're not doing that. You need a better offer. Me, I don't even know what good offers are like. I'm not, I was a child. I was like 11, 12, 13. I was like, we're going to need at least 1500 to 1000.
Wow.
So in that particular situation, I was able to negotiate a good deal for him. But there's been other times, and my siblings can attest to this, to who went, where he'll do stuff for just like food. And it just really, I feel like he allows himself to be undervalued. And to me, it hurts me because, you know, he frequently will use like, you kids don't listen to me because I'm deaf. If I was hearing, you guys would listen to me. I'm like, Dad, it's not about that. Like, you were normal. You were a normal parent for the longest time I can remember. And then we got to high school and was like, okay, you guys are just different. To me, I never viewed my dad being deaf as a disability. And I know a lot of deaf people don't view it as a disability. They view it as a superpower. But for whatever reason, my dad would frequently, you know, like, if I wasn't deaf, you guys would, just respect me more. And I was like, Dad, that's not the case. Kids are just, you know, especially in high school, it's biological. We're going to rebel, and we're not going to say, we're going to act out, right?
Yeah.
Because we're supposed to be getting ready to, you know, leave the nest. So, but he always, you know, attributed it to him being deaf. And to me, I never thought, like, I was like, Dad, he could hoop, could hoop. He was good with his hands as far as handiwork. And I don't know too many men who would decide to take three kids and raise them all by himself while being a deaf man. I don't know too many men who do that.
Exactly.
And so, and he also inspired me to, him doing that is why I came to Florida, because, you know, I'm from Kansas City, Missouri. And
when we say raising, we're talking about y'all had a house in the suburbs.
Right. And to give more context, you know, my mom didn't do too well. She wasn't making the best money. So we were in the inner city. You know, I thought roaches in the house were normal.
Yeah.
Thought bed bugs in the house were normal. And, you know, thought, you know, gunshots, hearing gunshots was nothing to me. Yeah. It was actually a culture shock going with my dad. And that's why I say I'm thankful. We had a house. You know, it might not have been the biggest house. It might not have been fully furnished.
Yeah.
But it was a house in a good neighborhood, in a good school. I was able to participate in sports. I was able to make good friends and explore different opportunities that I don't think would have been available to me if I was still in the inner city.
All right, so here's something. I know there's funny stories.
Yeah.
Like, you share with me, so we got to share with the group. You talk about having a parent who's deaf. And we talked about the hardship and the challenges that it has and that you had to work through, you and your sister. Tell some of the stories. There's three in particular, or at least however you want to tell, because he was deaf, these scenarios happen.
Yeah, there's definitely some unique experiences. So I'll start off with some, you know, we'll build up to the big three. Let's do it that way. So, you know, especially when I hit high school, you know, hormones is raging. I'm a young boy. I definitely did, you know, I wasn't a good, you know, just a perfect angel. You know, I did do some, you know, had a little deviant era.
Okay.
So some of the things I did do was like, you know, he couldn't hear and it was late at night. I'd bring a girl through the door. But a lot of the times, like, what the girl wouldn't understand is my dad has a sixth sense. I don't know how, but if you just hit something, the headboard hits the door, you slam the door too hard, he just feels it. No matter where he's at the house, he could be at the top story, I could be in the basement, and he would feel it and, like, and just start yelling and yelling my name. I'm like, so.
And when you say yeah, like it's his version of yelling, right? So
yeah, like I don't know how to describe it to people. You have to hear it, and that's one of the features I do love about my dad, because I feel like it's like a very, like, you know, a masculine it type is. Of. Like, yeah. That's kind of how, like, it's and, you know, a lot of my friends, they're like, whoa, it's kind of a cultural shock for them, but for me, you know, just growing up with deaf people, it's normal. Yeah. And it's just, you know, how we all have our different tones and voices like that. But yeah, his is definitely more of an aggressive masculine, like, I don't know, like a bearish
it is
type of, like, roar.
Especially if he's trying to get your attention,
yeah, like
he will get your attention,
and he can say my, and I understand his name, like,
yeah,
you know, if I have friends over, they probably don't understand. They're like, what is he saying? Like, oh, I did something wrong. He's just like, and
yeah,
I'm like, oh shoot, let me go run downstairs because he needs something. Yeah. So, and I always like give my dad his own little voice while I'm telling his stories, like speaking.
Yeah.
That's how I imagine he would sound, is like an aggressive, hearty man. But I, you know, that goes into, let's go into the next story, like football practice, for example.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was leaving football practice. One of my homies, Kevon, he needed a ride home. And I said, yeah, man, I got you, man. So we're just riding. He's in the back of my dad's truck. We're cruising, you know, heading home. And, you know, I curse. You know, I curse in the household because he definitely couldn't hear. I did take advantage of that. But the rule amongst our siblings was we didn't cuss at our dad. That was
right.
We thought that was disrespectful because if he wasn't able to, you know, defend himself, it was just wrong. You know, I'm cussing, like, yeah, man, you know, I fucked you up on that play, for example. And he's like, a little nervous. He's like, and I'm like, yeah, man. I'm like, damn, man, you ready for that game? And he's like, hey, your daddy let you cuss? And I'm like, oh, he can't hear Max, man. He's like, oh, that's jacked up. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, don't make me feel bad, like, but I was like, I'm not cussing at him. He's like, you can do it. He's like, nah, man. He swore up and down he wouldn't do it. That's what one thing I did appreciate about Kevon was he did. It was very respectful.
Okay.
And then I guess let's talk about
church.
Church. So this was in high school. Yeah, I want to say this was in high school. I don't remember particularly, but you know, Kaylee and AJ weren't there. My brother's sister weren't there. I think they had just moved to their moms or something like that. So it's just me and my dad. He got invited out by his supervisor or his boss at work to go visit his church. And so, you know, I didn't have my phone, and you know, I grabbed my dad's phone because it was a long drive. It was an hour drive. So I was getting bored. So I grabbed his phone. I turned up the volume all the way. It's an important fact right there.
You turned up the volume all the way. Okay.
So we watched my video. We finally get to the church. You know, we're entering the church. I hand him back his phone. He turns it off, puts it in his pocket. Well, not, he puts it to sleep. He doesn't turn it off, you know, just clicks it off. It's still on. And, you know, we're sitting down.
And you're watching, like, YouTube videos.
Yeah, I was watching YouTube videos, like music videos or, like, whatever I was watching.
Okay.
Just keep me entertained. And we finally sit down in the pews. And we get to praise and worship. The one thing that they did mention, they was going to have an interpreter. We did not find the interpreter until about like maybe 15 minutes into the service. So my dad and me were already upset.
Uh-huh.
And like I said, he kind of sometimes will get stubborn and he's like, no, you're not going to sign, you know. And because we appreciate the service of an actual like professional, like those people are trained. Yeah. They know how to like, you know, I don't mind speaking for my dad anytime, but though there's a definite difference of a certified ASL interpreter. So we find her, and so we're in the back pew. Normally, deaf people are going to sit the front, and the interpreter is going to be right there on the stage.
Yeah,
I don't think they understood that you know that cultural norm. Yeah. So we were kind of in the back because it was already full, and then we did find the interpreter, but it was kind of hard to see. And I don't know who. I don't think she was certified either because some of the stuff she didn't know, and so my dad was already kind of upset. So. Praise and worship was long. I think this was a Baptist church. So it was very long and, you know, a lot. But my dad can't really get into it because, okay. like, he's deaf, right?
Right.
At least my dad. You know, I know some other deaf people can vibe with the music, but he wasn't feeling it. And he was sitting down, and it was, you know, I was even getting tired because it was going on an hour. And then we finally get into prayer. And he's nodding off during the prayer. I'm like, I'm kind of getting a little bit embarrassed. I'm like, man, and he gets on his phone. I'm like, you know, that's fine. He'll be on his phone. Interpreter's not really doing her job. She's lacking. And I said, fine. So pastor's, you know, he's preaching, all right? He's preaching. I keep glancing over my dad. He's scrolling on his phone. And, you know, I'm like, all right, he's cool. All of a sudden, it was like a lull in the church. And you just hear, oh. And I'm like, oh. And I look. And it was like maybe 30, not even 10 seconds. I grab his phone. He was watching porn. Turn the phone off, sprint out of the church. Like, and in hindsight, 2020, everyone was looking at me.
Like, he was watching porn in church.
And it was a hot summer
day. You know what they're thinking? His father's deaf. His father doesn't know. He's in church watching porn.
Yeah, so it was embarrassing. I want to say I was probably flush red.
Wow.
Flush red. And I was waiting out the truck just mad. And it was in, like, it was a Baptist church. So, you know, I didn't know what time they was going to let out. They don't dismiss you. God dismisses you, right? So, you know, he finally comes out. And I'm like, we arguing, signing back and forth fast. And he's like, why did you touch my phone's volume? I'm like, why are you watching porn in church? And I got in trouble for it.
Wow. Well, I love that story. Dude, when you told me that, I was like, you have to share that in the podcast. You have to. But it's crazy because those are the type of things that people would never, ever think could happen in a household, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it was second nature for you because it was an adjustment for us when he came to Kansas, but then when he came to visit, to have captions on the bottom of the TV. And so I know you grew up in it.
Yeah.
Was it hard for you to not have captions on the TV?
I have captions to this day.
To this day.
Everything, my phones, everything, because I need it. I don't know if I need it, but it's just something, like you said, I'm just used to it.
Yeah.
So if you go to my house, the only time we had captions off in the Fox household was, you know, during a football game or basketball game. That's the only time because they would get in the way.
Yeah.
But everything else, and I do the same thing, you know. Watching a movie, there'll be captions. TV shows, there'll be captions. And I was game night, captions coming off. So, yeah. And I've had people come to my house and they're like, oh, take that off. And I'm like, you can leave. It's my house.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, I noticed like when we went to visit family though, yeah, I'm like, oh man, how you do it again?
And right,
like,
right.
Click, click.
Put the captions.
Yeah,
on.
It was routine.
You know what I love about you, your father, your sister is because we don't practice a lot. Y'all never hesitate to teach us all. Even if you teach us the same thing you taught us last time, be like, oh, you still don't know this. All right, here you go. Here's how you do it. Speaking of father, your father now.
Yeah.
Right. My niece, Gracie, beautiful. What would you say, how were you impacted? How did it impact you in being a father? How has it molded you? What things has your life experiences shaped you to do, see, or be? And then the other side of that is, how did it impact the types of relationships you entered into. So you can answer that either way. If you want to talk about the relationships or you want to talk about parenting.
We'll start with being a dad. So yeah, I'm a father of a beautiful 4-year-old girl. Tall and beautiful. And I would say I am really conscious about, she's young now, so she might not remember everything, but I want to practice now is making sure I don't involve her in adult business. Cause that's what I had to do for my dad. Yeah. I'm not faulting him for that. He needed someone to be his mouth.
Yeah.
So, and that was just my experience growing up, but I want to be, I'm not saying I feel like sometimes my childhood was, I wouldn't say it's robbed. I had a lot of fun as a child, but it was definitely, if light bulb was coming off, and we went to wherever I knew about it. If we were going to the Social Security office and they were talking about, you're about to lose your benefits, I was there speaking. Anything. And so I became that voice, but I just want to make sure my daughter Gracie doesn't have to, I shield her from that stress and anxiety of, being an adult, because sometimes it's not easy. And I don't think a child needs to be involved in that. And I think a lot of CODAs have experienced that as well.
Yeah.
But it's also something to appreciate. It's very maturing. It teaches you a lot of things. I feel like I was like kind of a step ahead of my peers as far as, being responsible. Like I moved out at 18, 19, as soon as I came back from the art boot camp, I was out. So that's definitely one thing I know that taught me a lesson, was just make sure that, Gracie, she's worried about kids stuff. Me, I'll handle the adult stuff.
Are you teaching her sign language?
Yeah. We're trying to teach her sign language. I am. Her mom doesn't know sign language.
Right.
So in that year I was deployed, kind of messed up a lot of things I was teaching her. So we're trying to get back into, getting her fluent.
What's her relationship with your dad when Alan comes to visit?
At first, like when she was really young, she was terrified of him. But I think it was because of how he sounded.
Yeah.
And she wasn't used to that. But now she always is like, "Where's Papa Fox? Where's Papa Fox?" And I'll call him and he'll be laughing on the phone and she'll be like, "Hey," and she knows how to say, "I miss you" or "I love you." And she knows how to do the love you sign and stuff like that. So she's definitely improving. She definitely needs more practice, but I feel like if he, dad's trying to come down here. So if he comes down here and he moves in with me, I think it will definitely help expedite that process. And me, that's why I frequently now I've talked to you about going out to deaf events and stuff like that. Cause I'm trying to get back involved with being adult and not living with my dad. I realized it's like, oh wow, I'm out of practice.
Yeah.
So I need to get back involved with the deaf community, make some younger friends, put me on the young slang, I don't know some of the signs and stuff, the newer signs, that people are talking about these days or using these days. So
now what about relationships?
Relationships. I want to say it's definitely, an attention grabber at the start of a relationship. They're like, what? Sign language, like it's something to talk about. It's a conversation starter. I think a lot of girls like that, I know sign language because like, oh, he's bilingual, blah, blah, blah. But I also think it's definitely it can be a barrier to some because they're like, oh, I'll never get close to my in-laws if we're ever to get married. I think that was a problem with my last relationship was there was a lot of issues with communication, especially if I wasn't there. It was like, oh, I think they were saying this about me, or I think they were saying he said, she said type of things. And I think that had a definite impact. And I'm not saying it's either party's fault, but I think my next, my future wife, I'm like, look, if you really want to be with me, be my wife, I'm not saying you need to be a master, but if you can at least fingerspell, that's really all you need. Fingerspelling is like almost 85 to 90% of speaking in American Sign Language. So if you can at least do that for me, then I think we can ride this out. Because you want to be close with your in-laws, of course. to a certain extent. So I think that was definitely something that is a barrier for some people. Like, oh, they kind of get scared or whatever, I think.
Here's my final question. For a young person who may be 12 or 13, who might see this podcast and they are the dependent, a parent with any type of significant impairment, and they might have had to take on a lot of the responsibilities, whether it's deaf, blind, not being able to walk, what would you tell them?
I would say something that I wish I would have done was connect with other CODAs. Because, you know, you could be able to share in the similar experiences you have.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of be like a therapeutic effect, I'd imagine, because you'd be able to just converse and be like, man, I'm stressed, I'm anxious. Because some of that sounds, at least for me, it was stressful sometimes, especially when it was like, my dad was like, I need you to like, or my mom was like, I need you to like tell this lady how badly we need the lights kept on, or, you know, please don't.
Wow.
Like stuff like that. Or I remember interpreting for this lady to get us a better rate at a hotel because we were actually homeless for a little bit. At that time, I thought we were just staying in the hotel, but realized that we got evicted out of our house. So that's what I say. Just find you a sense of community, and, you know, it can be the deaf community. But I really say other CODAs or other people who are just taking care of you, if your parents blind or something, like find some, you know, a companion or a community that can share in that and help guide you more in that, and cherish it. You know, there are experiences that I truly love. I will remember all the stories I shared with you until I die. I'll be telling my grandparents, my grandkids that story. So, you know, I don't regret any moment of it. I love every bit of it. And, you know, anytime someone wants to talk about it, they can hit me up.
Yeah.
So that's, well, I think that's what I.
Well, man, listen, this has been an amazing podcast. I love hanging out with you, you and your dad. You guys are my cigar compadres now, because that's my hobby. And I turned you on to it. And so now you do it and your dad does it. But, man, I'm proud of you. Like, the man you are, I've seen the journey. You truly are an exceptional father. Just a really good dude.
Thank you.
And then everyone who supports the podcast, look forward to seeing you all in the next episode. And remember, in his voice. Oh.